This
is URN.
Hello and welcome to Nerd of Mouth, the weekly show where we talk about all things nerdy. You're joined by me, Philippa. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm joined by...
Hi, I'm Ibtisam, and I use he, him pronouns. It's been a while, Philippa.
Yes, nice to see you. What nerdy things have you been up to this week?
Quite a lot, but I'm going to narrow it down to just one thing. I picked up a new comic book today. It's a one-shot, so it's a single-issue comic. It's not going to be made again. It's called Marvel's Voices, and it's this really lovely thing which came out of a podcast of people who talked about how they identified with different Marvel superheroes because some of them were black, some of them were women, some were disabled, some were LGBTQ, and it kind of inspired a few different writers to create a look at how superheroes can be relatable. My favorite issue with it's like a collection of smaller stories. So my favorite story within it is a group of LGBTQ superheroes going to Pride.
Nice.
And kind of talking about how they always go to Pride but they don't go in costume, but this year they decided to because it's becoming a statement again. And also because some people are beginning to face some backlash from attending Pride, and they're kind of recognizing that the kind of atmosphere about around being LGBTQ isn't as safe as it maybe used to be for some people recently. And there's this really lovely panel in it where a couple of them are being, you know, oh my God, you're superheroes. And they go, well, actually, the real superheroes were Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera because they started off Pride. So this lovely little look at how... people can have heroic moments without having superpowers, and how it means a lot to have part of your identity validated.
That sounds really cute.
Yes.
fluffy, happy stuff. Just eking into this week, I went to see Birds of Prey, which is the new Harley Quinn film, and it was really good. I won't say, obviously, any spoilers, but I'll just say it was really, really good and very enjoyable. A little bit gory, as you would probably expect as a move on from Suicide Squad, and I would probably say a lot better than Suicide Squad as well. But Margot Robbie is a gem. I will pretty much always want to watch anything she's in.
Yeah, I think just purely based on the trailer, I haven't seen the film yet, purely based on the trailer, what made me excited was looking at how much they were able to give Harley Quinn a lot of agency and like a real focus on, you know, she's a doctor. She's Dr. Harley Quinn. She is really clever and really quirky. And I kind of got really disappointed how Suicide Squad ignored some of those aspects and tried to overly sexualize her.
Yeah, she's definitely, it's a lot more of her choice of doing things, and you can understand why she, as Harley Quinn, has chosen to do it, as opposed to, like, that seems like maybe a film producer told you to do that.
I'm excited to see
anyway.
It. I haven't had a chance to, but I'm really glad that review makes me even more excited to go watch it.
Yes, I would highly recommend anyone who is listening to go and have a watch of that. It was very enjoyable. Went out to dinner afterwards. Very nice evening and general thing. So, moving on to perhaps a bit more of a general topic that perhaps affects us as nerds. This week we thought we would have a little chat about gatekeeping. So gatekeeping generally means sort of saying like, oh, only these people can do this thing, or, you know, you don't get to partake in this unless you do a certain thing. So examples, like general examples, would be saying sort of like, oh, well, only craft beer is real beer, and if you don't drink that, then you're not a real beer drinker. But in this context, as nerds, it's things like saying, oh, you're not a real gamer unless you've played all of this particular game and you know the endings, and or you're not a real comic fan unless you know every single detail. So have you experienced any of this? What are your thoughts on general thoughts to start with?
I've definitely been on the receiving end of it, especially when I pick up something new. So I do really love comic books, but I grew up in Bangladesh where I didn't have a lot of access to many different comic books. I mostly had access to kind of the big Marvel and DC superheroes, and I loved them to bits. Spider-Man's my absolute favorite for that, partially for that reason, because I got to access a lot of his stories. But a lot of online forums, you know, when I kind of come on and go, oh, I like this particular type of Spider-Man, they go, oh, that's not the best one, and how could you have liked that one? You must not have read XYZ issue. I'm like, well, no, I haven't. That's from 1970 and I don't have access to it. Also, I don't have the money to buy really old issues, which are more expensive now anyway. And it is quite discouraging because a lot of times what we talk about as nerds, and something that we talk about a lot on this show, is how a lot of aspects of nerd culture really mean things to us personally, whether as a form of genuinely serious empowerment or even just a kind of, well, I like this, let me enjoy it. And I think gatekeeping really gets in the way of that in very toxic ways.
Yes, definitely. I think, yeah, I mean, I've definitely had it of like, oh, why are you in the local game shop looking at these Xbox games? Why don't you go over to the, you know, the girly games or whatever? And it's like, no, I want to shoot things in Call of Duty. Turns out now I actually do prefer, you know, quote unquote girly games more. But also the fact that we sort of distinguish those as well, I think, is another aspect of it, of like believing that only certain people play video games is a really common misconception, when actually if you involve all types of games, so for example, mobile games should technically still count if you're including people who are gaming, then you've got basically everyone plays some form of game. So that's a massive one that definitely happens quite a lot as well.
Oh, huge, 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 huge.
Have you ever ended up accidentally doing the other way round? I know I've sometimes sort of thought like, oh no, you know, oh, you're not doing it right, or, oh, you're saying this wrong and you don't know what you're talking about. I don't want you to be, you know, classified with me because I'm a cool nerd.
I think the two ways I have been guilty of this, and one is, I think, slightly more complex. I'll start with that one, just because I think it's a bit of a meatier one, is when I specifically have problems with my childhood bullies, who used to pick on me a lot for being a nerd, suddenly loving nerdy things now that it's more mainstream, such as, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Me reading Spider-Man comics was something I'd get bullied for. Yeah. But, oh my God, Spider-Man is so cool. And I kind of just sit at the back going, you don't know anything about it. But more than that, it's the, you used to bully me about this. And it's this really... Yeah, it's this really complex feeling of, wow, you like the same things I do now. Maybe you wouldn't have been so mean to me if you did.
I had the same thing. There was a trend, showing my age, 8 years ago or so, for those t-shirts that said I heart nerds or I'm so nerdy. And it was all like basically nerd or geek chic clothing. And a lot of girls who used to make fun of me for being very nerdy suddenly went out and bought all of those clothes. And it really used to frustrate me because I'd want to wear them, but I'd be like, I don't want to wear them because I'm associated with you. So I can see how it happens and starts like that. But then, yeah, I think it can create a bit of a problem if you're stopping new people from joining your, you know, surely a hobby that you want to share.
Absolutely.
So that can definitely happen.
I think the side of that really is, this weird kind of look at how commercialization has an impact on that as well. Yeah. I think a lot of times things become more popular or more mainstream when big companies take over. I know that a lot of the comic book characters who are making big money at the box office now really weren't considered cool or popular until they started making film franchises out of them. I know a lot of people hadn't even heard of Iron Man until after 2008. And again, showing my age there. But I think that's part of it. And I don't think that's necessarily an issue of individual gatekeeping. I think that's actually a bigger problem with regards to commercialization, which I think is a whole different episode all on its own. And I think they're interlinked. I do think that when gatekeeping becomes about punching down, and I think I have the same, I have the same thing about humor. If you're punching down, it's a massive problem. And gatekeeping often involves punching down, I find, especially in this day and age. But if you're trying to kind of keep a safe space for nerddom.
Yeah, or a community.
So I know, for instance, when Pride, the comic book, it's in indie comic books, it won't be on the Marvel or DC shelves if anyone goes looking for them. That started off specifically to kind of look at LGBTQ stereotypes and turn them into superheroes. So, you know, kind of the effeminate, I forgot the character's name, and I do apologize, but, you know, his superhero is he has really weak hands, but he can use sonic booms using that, those kinds of things. And that came from a space of reclaiming a lot of really harmful stereotypes. And I do think, I won't say gatekeeping in the sense of people who aren't LGBTQ shouldn't read them, but I think there's an aspect of perhaps LGBTQ plus fans needing that, as identifying with that more, and perhaps needing a safer community space to discuss some of it. And maybe some of those discussions shouldn't be had outside of the community. I know I wouldn't be comfortable with talking about reclaiming LGBTQ plus slurs with someone who is cisgender and heterosexual, for instance. So those are some areas where I think contextual gatekeeping can be helpful. So there is that side of it too.
But I think there's definitely a lot of cases. I think, I mean, I'm sure anyone listening can think of an example, if you sort of classify yourself as a nerd, where this has happened, where perhaps, you got excited in a new hobby, and then, as you say, like, maybe the fashion is following something that's quite expensive and it's hard to get into. And you end up losing out on potentially getting to talk to people, because it only takes one comment for someone to say, oh, you don't know about that. And suddenly you don't feel part of that community anymore.
Absolutely.
So I think it can be quite a big thing there. I wanted to mention an example I had thought of with this, which was kind of damaging creativity, was the new She-Ra series that came out on Netflix. So obviously She-Ra originally came from the 1990s, don't know which one, but an earlier series that was on the telly. Loads of people really liked that. So when they said they were going to remake She-Ra, headed by Noel Stevenson, there was kind of a mixed reaction. Of some of the older fans were very, very excited, and a lot of older fans were not excited, because in their opinion, there was a very big stylistic shift. There was quite a shift in the tone. It was also marketed to a much younger audience. And for them, their opinion was, well, you've ruined the original. And for all the new people coming to She-Ra, like myself, we were going, we love this new thing. We haven't seen the old thing. You know, it doesn't matter. You can watch both things. But it created this big divide. And what really should have been, oh, we all like the fact, like this idea that this thing came from. And we can always enjoy both things separately. And it's fine. You don't have to say that someone else shouldn't be accessing it just because you don't like one version of it. I think that's kind of a good example of that. Luckily, the new She-Ra series persevered through and has got a lot of popularity by itself.
I think the nostalgia side of gatekeeping, like the kind of generational gap in gatekeeping, is really, really interesting one, for lack of a better word. I've seen a lot of people do it with Doctor Who, especially because the show kind of did take a break. Well, for a lot of people, it ended. Didn't realise it was a break, and then it came back, and obviously a brand new generation of people fell in love with it. And compounding that generational gap is also the kind of international angle of it, where Doctor Who was very much a British show when it first aired. And by that, I don't mean it had necessarily had British sensibilities, whatever that might mean, but it was really only accessible to British viewers.
And it does have a British context to what's going on.
Whereas since its renewal, it's gone international. But as a result of that, a lot of the international fan base, myself included, only have the new Doctor Who as kind of the reference point for it. Where I do have a lot of sympathy for is when, you know, there's comments like, oh, the old Doctor Who was objectively different and therefore objectively better. Like, I've seen some of the old shows now, and I have to say that in a weird way, because they didn't have big budgets, they were better at storytelling because they had to focus on stories. So that I don't mind, but where it gets really challenging is kind of where you draw the lines. And obviously none of these are conversations, you know, there's not like an arbiter who just walks into conversations and goes, now you're gatekeeping, now you're discussing an opinion. So it gets tricky. But yeah, Doctor Who's definitely one I've noticed that in. And I've seen kind of both sides of that as well.
I have quite a fun example of one where I was on the opposite side of the argument with the sort of old and new, which I never said anyone couldn't enjoy the new one, but I was like, I like the old one, which was for The Chronicles of Narnia, which obviously the movies came out, I think I was about 13 or 14, but I had the old, very old TV series onto video.
Oh, I love that one.
Which had Reaper Cheap, the mouse, as a someone dressed up in a rat, like a rat costume.
I love that one.
The, you know, the Invisible Men were just people jumping on trampolines, like... I love it because it is like so old and bad. But I never was like, oh no, I don't want anyone else to watch, like we shouldn't have the new ones. And I think that's the difference, isn't it, between, oh, you might enjoy this older version versus, no, we can only have this original. Same thing happened with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
As well. Like there's an older version of that, which is very funny. Again, partly because it's got a lower budget, it has to do things slightly differently. But, you know, you can kind of enjoy both and appreciate the history of something without necessarily saying that, oh, well, you're too young to understand or you're too young to do this.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. And I think that's where kind of remakes can be quite hit and miss as individual projects, but yes, they're quite fun in terms of being able to introduce something to new audiences. And I do think, I find that most people who have been on the receiving end of some sort of gatekeeping, on the flip, and maybe I'm making a massive generalization here, but they also tend to be the ones who are the most unashamedly nerdy in the sense of like, oh, but I want everyone to watch this show because I want everyone to enjoy it, not you because you bullied me. Jokes aside, but everyone. And I actually think that part of the gatekeeping issue does tie in with a few other dynamics. I know that, for example, there's a huge thing about I've never been on the receiving end of this because of my privilege, but I know there's a huge thing about gamer girls.
Yes.
And kind of how, oh, if you're a girl who likes games, you must be fake.
You're just making it up to get attention.
Yeah. Or, oh, you only, and something I have seen, now the receiving end of is, oh, you only like comics now because they're more people of color. Mm-hmm. And I find that it's a Tumblr post, so I'm obviously take this with a massive pinch of salt. It's not a scientific study by any means, but I saw this really interesting post about how for a lot of now white men, but then young white boys of a certain generation, nerddom was something that made them other.
Yes.
And it kind of simultaneously created a space that they could be bullied, which is really unfortunate, but also a space where they could find a community, which many of us who are marginalized in other ways totally, totally respond to. And it almost sounds like for some of them, they've talked about this as well, where they kind of go, my gut instinct is kind of to feel that this is my space.
Yeah.
And I get that emotional gut feeling. I don't think it's justified.
No.
because I do think that the power of nerd culture, the positive side of it, is more people should be able to share it. But I can understand that initial gut reaction of, no, this is mine.
Yeah. I think also that comes with that is sometimes if you have a feeling that you are the expert in something, mm-hmm. you know, oh, well, I am really good at this video game, or, oh, I know everything about this thing. And yeah, someone comes in who, you know, rightly or wrongly, maybe you have a hidden stereotype that you don't think that they should be as good as you, or they are newer to it, and then they're suddenly, for some reason, better. I think that can really put people off. I know I had an ex-boyfriend who could not handle if I could beat him at a video game.
Very glad he's an ex.
Reasons that he's an ex, you'll be glad to hear. But yeah, he couldn't handle that. So we didn't play any, which is a shame because, you know, I like playing video games.
that point on diversity, by the way, I think it absolutely, it's one of those that really frustrates me when people go, oh, you know, comic books are too PC now. And I kind of just make
them. There's so many.
Well, for starters, I'm like, well, first of all, there are loads which are not PC, so you can just go read those instead. But I think it also does a massive disservice to the history of comic books, and I know I'm talking specifically comic books here, but you know, they were early comics were created by people like Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, who specifically were explicitly in their works, but kind of in their own experiences, how they'd been othered for being Jewish. So a lot of their creations of superheroes were very much along the lines of, I've been bullied for this part of my identity, and here's kind of a response to that in a very fantastical way. So comic books and the media that sprawls from it, so comic book-based video games, comic book-based movies, which are obviously a big thing now, there's a massive social justice slant to them, which is partially why I love them so much.
Yeah.
Also, for people who complain about diversity and diverse casting, go watch the original Batman TV series, because Cesar Romero was a Latino Joker and Eartha Kitt was a Black Catwoman. No one complained back then, or at least if they did, they did quietly and it wasn't safe for posterity. So you've got a lot of, and even, you know, shows like Star Trek, which are about going beyond kind of human limitations of prejudice and bigotry, there's some really powerful stuff out there. And I think that's one of the really sad things about gatekeeping, because popular culture, generally speaking, is about trying to make things accessible and inclusive. And gatekeeping really harms that.
As we were saying, it can often hamper a lot of creativity that would otherwise, been available. Or it stops someone who potentially could have produced some really exciting stuff from wanting to join in. I want to just, as we're talking about this, also speaking about those effects, I think another effect that can happen is obviously the more you do it, the more it becomes a full-on stereotype. So using again the example of like, oh, well, women don't game. This can create a massive problem in actual terms when you start developing technology in certain directions. So I thought a really interesting example that, once again, I'm going to shout out to one of my favourite books, which is Invisible Women, the Gender Data Gap by Criado Perez. That's her last name, Criado Perez. If you look that up, you'll find it. And she was talking about how she went to a gaming convention and tried on a VR headset. And firstly, she tried it on and it wouldn't adjust her eyes because she was wearing mascara. Now, luckily, the person who invented that headset was a woman and went, ah, I can calibrate that for your makeup. But obviously, you might not have thought of that. But then another issue is for some reason, women are more likely to get motion sick than men. And so when you wear a head, obviously when you wear a VR headset, you are more likely to get motion sick. And then you haven't got a lot of the elements of a normal video game, such as a lot of games will have a dot in the middle of the screen that you can focus on. And that doesn't happen in VR, obviously. But part of the problem is it's being tested and tested and tested on a lot of men and not being tested. And then it's compounded by saying, well, oh, well, we don't have that many women gamers anyway.
Exactly. And you actually end up creating that dearth of women
So
gamers because
it
they can't
reinforces it.
access the town. And I think that's a huge thing with regards to general accessibility as well. A lot of cinemas don't try and take considerations like wheelchair access or, visual access or hearing aid access into account because they go, oh, we don't get that many customers. But the reason you don't get that many customers with access needs is because you're not accessible in the first place. It kind of recreates that whole cycle.
And then you say, well, you haven't seen this thing, so you can't be part of this fandom.
Yes.
Oh gosh, and the cycle is complete.
Exactly. So it can create some very real barriers, absolutely. One last thing I actually wanted to touch on, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, is what happens when the creators gatekeep. So, for example, Star Wars, when it got bought over by Disney, they had a massive sort of crackdown on extended universe. And part of that included actual licensed Star Wars things that Disney went, okay, this isn't canon anymore. But also a lot of the fan creations. And you see some of that, not quite to the same kind of legal extent because Star Wars, because it's owned by Disney, really cracks down hard. But there's also an extent of kind of delegitimization of the Harry Potter fandom whenever J.K. Rowling releases something new on Pottermore and you go, oh, well, that completely changes how I viewed this. And I'm wondering what happens when the creators do that, because, you can always argue, well, if they're the creators, that's a legitimate thing to do, but you are effectively gatekeeping.
Yeah, I think personally, I just ignore them.
Most of us do, don't we?
Mostly what I do is I just go, I'm going to choose what I want.
We do that as Harry Potter fans, we do that a lot, don't we?
Yeah.
Like, we don't care what J.K. Rowling has to say about kind of wizard plumbing, to use an
No.
example.
Oh gosh.
But ever since, some high school students told us that Hufflepuffs are particularly good finders, that's canon
Oh,
now.
obviously that's
That's
canon.
canon.
Sometimes I forget that that's not actually in the book. I'm like, Hufflepuffs, good finders. Yes,
Excellent
yes.
finders. Right. So yeah, I think that's an interesting one, and I hope that that's something that kind of does die down, because the
We mentioned this a little bit on, sorry, to with the fan fiction episode, but
Yes.
there are some authors who encourage greater creativity around their work and some who contain it. And I think generally, the more you are encouraging that more creativity, again, it creates a much more accessible community as well. So just thinking of an example from way back when I was on DeviantArt, posting all my fan art, and I drew this picture of Katniss Everdeen from Hunger Games. And in the book, she's described as having like, I think she's described as having like sort of olive skin.
Yes, I always read her as Native American.
Yeah, I always sort of saw her as sort of like Spanish Mediterranean colouring. And so when I was drawing her, I only had two colours of pencil. One was like pale princess, like massively pale, or I had like a tan colour. So I was like, I'll use the tan colour. And then I got comments like, this is not right. Like, it's the wrong. She's not this
Be
tan.
yeah, because Jennifer Lawrence isn't
She's
this
not this
tan.
tan. She's not this tan. It's like, why don't you just let me draw her? I want to draw her. You obviously know who it is. But, you know, it stifles people creating those different viewpoints that actually could make it more enjoyable.
And once they're absolutely needed. I think as a whole, we can probably agree that gatekeeping has become quite toxic. There can be legitimate reasons to do that, particularly when it's about creating safe spaces. Punching down is bad, punching up is good, and gatekeeping tends to punch down, which is a shame.
Don't do a hit unless it's on someone bigger than you. No, don't hit people, that's bad. But yeah, no, I think it definitely comes from a space where it's made sense to have it in the past, or maybe there is an understandable reason why you're doing it, but maybe that's a bad
Yeah, encourage more people to join your fandoms. It's a lovely experience. Please, trust us. I know that both of us in different capacities, including as part of the Harry Potter Society here and the Harry Potter Quiz Society here at uni in the past, we know what it's like to make the fandoms bigger. So that's always great.
Definitely. Also, yeah, there's always going to be new people because obviously as time goes on, younger people will start reading it or someone will come to it later in life, and that's all fine and usually to be encouraged. So with that, I think we'll draw to a close. We're coming to the end of our time slot, but you can find us here same time next week from 4:30 till 5. If you want to tell us what you think, please contact us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram as Nerd of Mouth URN. And so we will say goodbye for now, and we will see you the same time next week.